And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today is March the 28th. 87th day of the year. This year is just whipping by. 278 days remain till the year is over with. You know, the war is still going on in Ukraine. And Biden was in Poland and made a speech calling for regime change in Russia, and the White House raced to say that really wasn't what he meant. He meant something else. If the man can't be trusted to say what he's supposed to say, then he doesn't need to be out there saying it. He's got an earpiece where they give him everything to parrot, but apparently he goes off script. Well, on this day in AD 37, Roman Emperor Caligula accepts the titles of Principati, bestowed on him by the Senate. The Principati is a name sometimes given to the first period of the Roman Empire from the beginning of the reign of Augustus in 27 BC to the end of the crisis of the 3rd century in AD 284. It's characterized by the reign of a single emperor and an effort on the part of the early emperors, at least, to preserve the illusion of the formal continuance of the Roman Republic. 193, after assassinating Roman Emperor Pertinax, his Praetorian guards auctioned off the throne to Didius Julianus. 364, Roman Emperor Valentinian I appoints his brother Flavius Valens as co-emperor. That's a dangerous thing to do. 1566, the foundation stone of Valletta, Malta's capital city, is laid by Jean Parisot de Valletta, Grand Master of the Sovereign Military Order of Malta. That was another version of the war takeoff on the Knights Templar. 1776, Gian Battista de Anza finds the site of the Presidio of San Francisco. 1795, partitions of Poland, the Duchy of Courland and Semigallia, northern fief of the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth, ceased to exist and become part of Imperial Russia, which is what the current leader of Russia is trying to recreate. 1801, Treaty of Florence is signed, ending the war between the French Republic and the Kingdom of Naples. 1802, Heinrich Wilhelm Matthaus Olbers discovers two Pallas, the second asteroid ever to be discovered. 1809, Peninsular War. France defeats Spain in the Battle of Medellin. 1814, War of 1812 and the Battle of Valparaiso. Two American naval vessels are captured by two Royal Navy vessels. 1842, first concert of the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Otto Nicolai, takes place on this date. 1854, Crimean War. France and Britain declare war on Russia. 1860, the First Taranaki War. Battle of Eureka begins. 1862, American Civil War. Battle of Glorieta Pass. Union forces stop the Confederate invasion of New Mexico territory. Battle began on March 26th. The reason the Battle of Glorieta Pass was so important, the Confederates were on a roll, but they left their supply trains lightly guarded. And Union forces who were crossing through the foothills came upon it unexpectedly and destroyed the supply train. And if you know anything about New Mexico, water is sometimes hard to come by. 1910, Henri Fabre becomes the first person to fly a seaplane. The Fabre Hydravion, after taking off from a water runway near in France. 1918, John J. Pershing, general during the First World War, cancels the 42nd Rainbow Division's orders to Rolampont for further training and diverted it to occupy the Baccarat sector. Rainbow Division becomes the first American division to take over an entire sector on its own, which had held longer than any other American division-occupied sector alone for a period of 3 months. 1918, finished Civil War. On the so-called Bloody Monday, Thursday of Tampere, the whites forced the reds to attack the city center, with the city's fiercest battles being fought in Calabancangas, with large casualties on both sides. During that same day, an explosion at the red headquarters of Tampere killed several commanders. Speaking of dead commanders, the Russians have lost 7 generals, according to the last report. Russian generals lead from the front, unlike ours, who are so far in the back. It takes them a map and several days searching to find them. 1920, Palm Sunday tornado outbreak of 1920 affects the Great Lakes region and the Deep South states. 1933, the Imperial Airways biplane City of Liverpool is believed to be the first airliner lost to sabotage when a passenger sets a fire on board. 1939, Spanish Civil War. Generalissimo Francisco Franco conquers Madrid after a 3-day siege. 1942, World War II. A British combined force permanently disables the Louis-Gerbert lock in St. Nazaire in order to keep the German battleship Tirpitz away from the mid-ocean convoy lanes. 1946, Cold War. The U.S. Department of State releases the Acheson Lilienthal report outlining a plan for the international control of nuclear power. 1959, State Council of the People's Republic of China dissolves the government of Tibet. 1965, a 7.4 earthquake in Chile sets off a series of tailings dam failures, burying the town of El Cobre and killing at least 500 people. 1968, Brazilian high school student Edson Luiz de Lima Souto is killed by military police at a student protest. 1969, Greek poet and Nobel Prize laureate Georgos Seferis makes a famous statement on the BBC World Service opposing the junta in Greece, which was a very bad thing for him to do, safety-wise. 1970, an earthquake strikes western Turkey at about 23:05 local time, kills 1,086 and injures at least 1,200. 1978, U.S. Supreme Court hands down 5-3 decision in Stump versus Sparkman, controversial case involving involuntary sterilization and judicial immunity. 1979, a coolant leak at the Three Mile Island Unit 2 nuclear reactor outside Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, leads to the core overheating and a partial meltdown. That's not good. 1979, the British House of Commons passes a vote of no confidence against James Callaghan's government by one vote, precipitating a general election. 1990, U.S. President George H.W. Bush posthumously awards Jesse Owens the Congressional Gold Medal. If you remember, Jesse Owens in the Olympics held in Germany made a fool of the German athletes. 1994, in South Africa, African National Congress security guards killed dozens of Inkatha Freedom Party protesters. 1999, Kosovo War. Serb paramilitary forces killed at least 130 Kosovo Albanians in Izbica. 2003, in a friendly fire incident, 2 American A-10 Thunderbolt II aircraft attacked British tanks participating in the 2003 invasion of Iraq, kills 1 soldier. 2005, an earthquake strikes southern Sumatra with a magnitude of 8.6, kills over 1,000 people. And in 2006, at least 1 million union members, students, and unemployed take to the streets in France to protest the government's proposed First Employment Contract Law. Now, for those who are not familiar with what that was, it was a new form of employment contract pushed in the spring of 06 in France by Prime Minister Dominique de Villepine. This employment contract, available solely to employees under 26, would have made it easier for the employer to fire employees by removing the need to provide reasons for dismissal for an initial trial period of 2 years. And that's in exchange for some financial guarantees for employees. The intention was to make employers less reluctant to hire additional staff. Of course, the The enactment of this amendment to the so-called Equality of Opportunity Act, establishing this contract, was unpopular. Massive protests were held, and the government rescinded the amendment. It's terrible when your people don't agree with what you propose to do, because you're much smarter than they are, as our current president has said, and he knows better than we do what we need. Holidays and observances, Christian Feast Day, Priscus, Pope Sixtus III, Serfs and Emancipation Day in Tibet, and Teacher's Day in the Czech Republic and Slovakia. Now, let's see what we have. No, that's not good. Okay, March. We'll have it here in a minute. All righty. In 519, Pope Hormisthus reunites the Eastern and Western Church, ends the Acacian Schism in a ceremony in the Cathedral of Constantinople. 1535, Blomkamp Abbey, attacked and destroyed in Friesland. 1556, Karel V's son Philip II is crowned King of Spain. 1556, the origin of the Fasili era in India. 1738, Parliament sends an address to the king requesting he demand redress from Spain because of the War of Jenkins' Ear, which we touched on in an earlier show. 1774, Britain passes a coercive act against Massachusetts. 1794, the Louvre opens to the public, though it's been officially open since August. 1794, the Allies under the Prince of Coburg defeat French forces at La Catal. Bethel African Methodist Church in Philadelphia is the first U.S. African church. 1797, Nathaniel Briggs of New Hampshire patents the washing machine. 1799, New York State abolishes slavery. 1804, Ohio passes a law restricting the movement of blacks. I don't know what the big hang-up is on color. 1809, we talked about that. 1830, a Javanese prince, Diponegoro, leader of resistance against Dutch colonial rules, arrested by Dutch authorities during peace negotiations. 1834, the Senate censors President Jackson for taking Fed deposits from the Bank of the U.S. 1845, Mexico drops diplomatic relations with the U.S. 1854, Britain and France declare war on Russia during the Crimean War. 1862, skirmish at Bealeton Station in Virginia. 1866, the first ambulance goes into service. 1881, The Greatest Show on Earth was formed by P.T. Barnum and James Anthony Bailey, both of whom were circus showmen and businessmen. 1885, the Salvation Army was officially organized. 1891, the first World Weightlifting Championship, won by Edward Lawrence in London, England. 1904, Japanese troops advance in Korea, defeat the Russians at Chungju, and capture the town. 1905, the Lawa Railway from Paramaribo to Dam Railway opens in Suriname. 1913, Guatemala becomes a signatory to the Buenos Aires Copyright Treaty. 1917, Jews are expelled from Tel Aviv and Jaffa by Turkish authorities. At one point in time, Turkey controlled what's now Israel. 1920, Anton Dinkin's White Russian troops are defeated by Bolsheviks and Soviets at Novorossiysk on the Black Sea. The British aid Dinkin in escaping. It destroyed his army. 1922, the first microfilm device is introduced. 1924, WGN-AM in Chicago begins radio transmissions. Now I think it's also a TV broadcaster. 1929, Democratic Constitution goes into effect in Ecuador. 1930, Turkey cities Constantinople and Angora change their names to Istanbul and Ankara. The Hagia Sophia was considered the world's largest cathedral for over 1,000 years. 1935, on this date, Robert Goddard used gyroscopes to control a rocket. 1935, the influential Nazi propaganda film Triumph of the Will is released, showing the Nuremberg rallies. Hitler commissioned it, and it was directed by Leni Riefenstahl. He was a well-known German film director. 1939, Dutch hunter shoots down British bombers. That was a bad day. 1940, construction begins on the exhibition center to host the Thessalonica International Trade Fair. 1941, a sea battle at Cape Matapan. The British fleet under Cunningham defeats Italy. 1942, the British naval forces raid the Nazi-occupied French port of Saint-Nazaire. Let's see what we got. Somebody keeps setting off my security cameras. All right, here we go. 1942, the Saint-Nazaire raid, known as Operation Chariot. Obsolete British destroyer HMS Campbellton, rigged with explosives and flying German flags, rams the gates of German-occupied Saint-Nazaire port in France and detonates. Kills 360 Germans disabled to dry dock for the duration of the war. 1944, Astrid Lindgren sprains her ankle, can't get around, and begins writing Pippi Longstockings. 1945, on this date, the last German B-1 buzz bomb attacked London. 1953, stock exchanges open, the dikes are closed, raises 5,200,000 guilders. 1953, on this date, KCAU-TV, Channel 9 in Sioux City, Iowa, begins broadcasting. In 1960, Pope John appoints the first Japanese, African, and Filipino cardinals. 1962, there's a military coup in Syria. President Nazim al-Qudsi flees. 1964, the first pirate radio station begins broadcasting near England. It's known as Radio Carolyn. 1969, Pope Paul VI names J.G. M. Willebrands cardinal. 1970, 1,086 die when a 7.4 earthquake destroys 254 villages in Gediz in Turkey. 1971, on this date, was the last original edition of the Ed Sullivan Show broadcasting on CBS-TV. 1972, Wilt Chamberlain played his last pro basketball game. 1978, Daryl Gates became the 49th chief of the Los Angeles Police Department. 1971, Martina Navratilova beat 16-year-old American tennis prodigy Andrea Jagr 6-3-7-6 in the final at the WTA Tour Championships at Madison Square Garden. 1982, the 12th Easter Seals Telethon raised $19,500,000. 1985, STS-51D launch vehicle moved to the launch pad. 1986, extremist Sikhs kill 13 Hindus in Ludhiana, India. 80. See if there's anything else. 1995 saw the world's largest bank created. Japan's Mitsubishi Bank and the Bank of Tokyo merge. 2009, we saw the first cases of H1N1 swine flu in the U.S. occurring to 2 people in California. Alrighty. I think that has pretty much got it for the history segment. Let's see what we have in the way of... You know, we've talked about all kinds of bizarre things. And we're going to talk about some conspiracy theories today. We were talking about Mae Brussels in one of our last shows. She was known as the Radio Queen. Broadcast for 17 years. And she talked about the mysterious shadow government that covertly governs the U.S. investigating the Kennedy assassination, which a lot of us have done, I've even written a book about it, she determined the Kennedy assassination showed linkages to the CIA and Nazi Germany and a wide range of modern and historical organizations and events across the globe. Seemed to her that the international network of secret organizations and conspiracies that formed and helped defeat the Axis during World War II had gone underground and continued their mission of trying to dominate world governments. She recognized many of the same names and deceptive strategies that converted Germany from a sophisticated scientific country in the 20s and 30s into a savage and cruel machine of bigotry and hate. Now, she began her broadcasting when she appeared as a guest in 1971 on KLRB, a FM radio station. Now, she didn't, sometimes she had a host station, sometimes she didn't. When she didn't have a host station, she taped her broadcast at home on a little cassette recorder and sent out the shows to a list of subscribers. KZU in Pacific Grove, California in 83 picked up her show. But due to death threats, she was taken off the air in 88. And until June 13th of 88, she continued to send out recordings explaining her discoveries. October 3rd of 88, she died of cancer. Well, in, in, I guess, 91 or 2, I was just moving a little bit more into writing, and I put together a show idea, and I sent it to Tracy Torme, Military Day's son. And he gave it to a friend of his, the name of Chris Carter, with who's looking for a show idea. And you saw my idea in the form of the X-Files. Now, Fox Entertainment said in 2002 the X-Files had earned the firm more than $1 billion. So apparently they had a good idea. And it was without a doubt the defining series of the 90s for conspiracy theorists. And in spite of fascinating just the conspiracy segment of society, it was accepted by a broad range of the population. Now, as you might guess, one thing that has... you get conspiracy theories from the strangest places. We got one organization called the American Family Association, founded by Reverend Donald Wildman as the National Federation for Decency in 1977. In 1988, it was changed its name to the American Family Association. Now, Wildman was a former Methodist clergyman, made a name for himself as a powerful force in banning trashy and unpleasant television commercials. And during the Reagan administration, he was appointed to Attorney General Edward Meese's Commission on Pornography by the commission's executive director, Alan Sears. And he managed to convince 17,000 convenience stores to remove publications like Playboy and Penthouse from their shelves. In 2005, Tim Wildman, Donald Wildman's son, took over as president of the American Family Association. He controls a 200 station radio network and a monthly magazine that goes out to roughly 200,000 subscribers. And they also employ hundreds of workers. Now, according to American Family Association, the burgeoning LGBT media presence is changing the U.S. into a skewed society. And I can't disagree with him there. And prominent LGBT leaders have openly supported the legalization of pedophilia, incest, sadomasochism, and bestiality. I mean, the judge that is up for the Supreme Court, she was publicly thanked by a convicted pedophile for only giving him a 3-month sentence because she knew the problems he had. And according to the American Family Association, homosexuals were the primary architects of Nazism and the Nazi horrors. And Satanism and homosexuality are extensively promoted by Procter & Gamble, according to the AFA. And through its radio stations and pamphlets and magazines, AFA has persuaded hundreds of thousands of people to boycott national marketers that promote items or notions that organization finds objectionable. You know, there's no question that there are a lot of wacky ideas out there. The problem is when they're packaged just right, you can sell literally anything. Now, another conspiracy theory, which has its beginnings in a very real occurrence, revolves around the airship of 1897. Now, according to the background, members of a secret group are in communication with extraterrestrials, and they built a gigantic airship described as resembling a cone-shaped riverboat. And they flew it over the Atlantic Ocean in 1897, several years before any known terrestrial agency had managed heavier-than-air flight. Now, society was poised firmly on the verge of the 20th century in 1897. Carl Benz and Henry Ford produced their first four-wheeled vehicles in 1893. 1895, Auguste and Louis Lumiere produced the cinematograph, which was the first device for showing movies. Guglielmo Marconi established radio telegraphy. Constantine Tsiolkovsky developed a rocket reaction theory known as propulsion. In 1897, the Royal Automobile Club was created in London. Automobiles on the road were becoming quicker by the year. I mean, scientists made the pronouncement that if a car ever went over 60 miles an hour, whoever was driving it would die from not being able to get enough oxygen. But in spite of all that, no heavier-than-air vehicles are racing over the sky, and several bright experts proclaim that such flying aircraft are aerodynamically impossible to make. In spite of that, on April 7, 1897, residents of Wesley, Iowa, saw a cone-shaped airship with brilliantly lit windows on its side. And unfortunately, the witnesses are unable to establish how it was pushed or what kept it aloft. But a lot of folks who had very good reputation saw it. Now, this airship landed 2 miles north of Springfield, Illinois on April 15th. The occupants told witnesses that they had landed to repair their electrical equipment and searchlight equipment. On April 17th, the airship returned to Iowa and landed near Waterloo. One of the inmates brandished a weapon to keep the curious at a safe distance from the machine. Journalist reported the airship was about 40 feet long and built like a gigantic cigar with wing-like extensions on the sides and a steering system in the back. There was a dome on the machine's roof. Then on April 21st and 22nd, the airship was seen in Arkansas and Texas. Woke up a former senator in Harrisburg, Arkansas about midnight. Members of the flying crew told him that the craft's designer was a genius from St. Louis who had found the key to suspending gravity's rules. They said the airship had taken 19 years to build, and since it wasn't yet complete, the crew chose to cruise on it at night. They were going to place the airship on public display after completing a mission to Mars, they said. I don't know if that mission ever got completed because the airship never went on display. Then a Texas farmer was awoken at midnight on April 24th by a peculiar whirling sound and the bright lights of what he thought were angels in a heavenly vehicle passed over his house. When it landed, he curiously approached the angels. They assured him they didn't come from heaven. They said they came from a little hamlet in Iowa where five of these airships had been built. The craft was made of a newly found substance that could sustain itself in the air. The driving force was highly concentrated electricity. Now, landing and contact reports poured in from throughout the country during the next several weeks. Sightings were recorded from all around the globe during the summer months of 1897. Strange airborne objects were seen above Sweden and Norway in July and August of that year. On the same day, what looked to be the same flying vessel was seen off the coast of Norway and above Vancouver, British Columbia. That means it had some speed to it. Now, in 1898, Count von Zeppelin revealed an airship, but the early versions had such a limited flying range that successful trips from Germany to England were just impossible at that time. Orville and Wilbur Wright achieved the first flight with a heavier-than-air vehicle in 1903. The airplane stayed aloft for 12 seconds and traveled 120 feet. Yet it got more distance with a paper airplane. However, no terrestrial organization had built an aerial vehicle capable of traversing the world at the speed and ease of the airship flown by these unknown inventors from Iowa or St. Louis or wherever they came from in the year of 1897. As a result, many academics assumed that the builders of the 1897 airship were members of a secret organization, maybe one that had been in contact with alien intelligence or their records and artifacts for thousands of years. Now, numerous European occult organizations have been formed around the concept that a secret society acquired a high degree of scientific knowledge centuries ago, and they've concealed this hazardous information from the rest of humankind ever since. There's a recurring motif that selected brilliant people in ancient Egypt and Persia were granted access to the world's sophisticated technology archives. Many hundreds of years ago, these ancient masters learned to replicate many of the accomplishments of the Titans of Atlantis. And this drew the notice of extraterrestrials who had been watching the Earth for evidence of high intelligence. I don't think even today they'd find evidence of high intelligence, especially if you look at Washington. The choice to build a society inside a society may have reflected the members' highly developed moral sense and their realization of the enormous responsibility that holding this knowledge entailed. They may have opted to stay quiet until the rest of the world grew educated enough to cope intelligently with such a high level of technological achievement. However, now and again, a secret organization may decide that the moment has come to make one of its findings public. Such interference in the concerns of the vast majority of humankind is frequently performed by carefully feeding certain bits of study to outside experts whose work and attitude they've considered to be especially worthy. Members of the secret society, on the other hand, may feel little or no obligation to individuals outside the organization. In fact, they may just be biding their time that they can enslave the majority of humankind. For hundreds of years, some academics have been concerned about global conspiracies carried out by secret organizations waiting for the opportune time to attain full world dominance. Well, after 12 years of flying around, the mystery airship vanished from the sky. And in Peterborough, England, a policeman reported hearing a sound like a motor car above flying over the city on March 4th, 1909. Looking up, he saw an airship emitting a bright light and moving at the speed of an express train. By July of 1909, the weird airborne contraption had been seen above New Zealand, where it lingered for 6 weeks before coming to the U.S. There's one recorded overflight in the New England region in August. Then the mysterious airship vanished. Until the night of December 12th, when Long Island residents heard a buzzing sound emanating from the sky above them, similar to the rattle and hum of a high-speed engine. January 20th, 1910. The final recorded sighting of an airship occurred in Memphis, Tennessee. Several witnesses reported seeing an object flying extremely high in the air at a high rate of speed across the Mississippi River into Arkansas, curved slightly to the south, and vanished. Maybe the secret society no longer felt the need to inspire outsiders to pursue the science of aeronautics, because by 1910 there had already been an international aviation competition held in Reims, France. There had been a flight from the deck of a seagoing cruiser. A float plane had taken off from the water, and the first woman pilot obtained her license. Well, you know, there's many strange activities that go on behind closed doors that would shock the rest of us. For example, let's talk about the activities of Yaki Francis Parker. This interesting individual dedicated his life to reversing the outcome of World War II and declaring the Third Reich the victor. Now, if he hadn't committed himself when the FBI eventually caught him in 1960, he'd be thrilled about how violent and chaotic global events have gone after 9/11. He would have had a party as a result of the World Trade Center collapsing and in the fact the Islamic radicals were the culprits of the terrorist deed. He had committed his life and all his resources to altering the results of World War II, and he thought by 2050 he could achieve that. Gave covert support to organized Muslim resistance to the West, hoping that terrorists who couldn't surrender would be assaulting American cities. He envisioned a scenario in which America's worldwide hegemony would be supplanted by a European superstate modeled on Hitler's Third Reich's ideas and dominated by elitists. Speaking of elitists, the VA has some. You know, the fourth floor where the powers that be sit is locked off. Only special people are allowed to associate with them. They don't want those pesky veterans to be giving them a hard time. Now, little is known about Yaki Francis Parker. Lived in the dark fringe's darkest reach. And just as fans of strange stories like the mystery of H.P. Lovecraft's Necronomicon, followers of fascism and Satanism like Yaki's underground work, Imperium. Of course, fans of Lovecraft's work recognize that the world he built with the ancient ones was a work of fiction. Fans of Yaki's work commit to realizing his vision of European unification under Nazi rule. He dismissed the Nazi loss of World War II as a transitory setback on the path to the ultimate objective of America's isolation from European affairs and the fascist revolution in America. Now, Imperium, Yaki's work, was created under the pseudonym of Ulrich Farage. Ulrich's allegedly a Danish-Irish name. Garage, a reference to the Norseman. And he was self-published in 1948 in a restricted edition of only 200 copies. Now, there were reprints of the text still in circulation among neo-Nazis and far-right organizations. They hold Yaki's ideas and theories in the same respect as previous like-minded readers held Hitler's Mein Kampf. It wasn't until a few years after his death that radical right publisher Willis Cartel released a paperback version of Imperium, and the book started to gain traction among neo-Nazi and neo-fascist organizations. His work's been commended by the Italian Hermetic philosopher Julius Evola, and Imperium was in sync with the Swiss-based New European Order, and its beliefs in the mythologies of Aryan origins in the Hyperborean North and Atlantis. Yaki was born in Chicago in 1917 to a professional class family of German, Irish, and French-Canadian descent. He was raised Roman Catholic, but when he became engaged with radical right groups in the 30s, he became drawn to theosophical Nietzscheanism. He was drawn to the German-American Bund. He was also drawn to the Stalinists, the Trotskyites, and Father Coughlin's semi-fascist followers. Any anti-capitalist organization And he literally got his support, and he was among those who firmly believed the world was in danger from the activities of Jews and Zionists. Some academics believe Iyake was a member of a German-American spy network and helped Nazi saboteurs infiltrate the U.S. Now, you want to hear something strange? During World War II, he was commissioned in the U.S. Army. And of course, shortly after taking his commission, he fled, but returned to service after proving to the Army he had a mental breakdown. Got a medical release with no suspicion of assisting Nazi spies and saboteurs during his time away from the base. Had a successful academic career at various colleges before the war. Had a law degree from Notre Dame and practiced. As an undergraduate, he studied at Georgetown University School of Foreign Service. And with those credentials, he went on to get a position with the German War Crimes Tribunal after the war. He was unfortunately hired because of his German affiliations. Later returned to Germany after landing a position with the American Red Cross. He fled his station to carry on what he felt was his more important work and was ultimately deported back to the U.S. He'd utilized this post to obtain the U.S. government assistance in funding his visits to Germany to engage in the expanding pan-European fascist network. According to conspiracy theorists, he spent the 50s amassing a dizzying assortment of identities as he went literally across the globe doing everything he could to promote the fascist cause. Most certainly a member of Odessa, a worldwide network of post-war Nazis and fascists. Some believe he spent a significant length of time behind the Iron Curtain before he came back to the U.S. for a short time to serve as a copywriter for Senator Joseph McCarthy. In addition, he's known to have spent time in New Orleans preparing propaganda for use in Latin America, and a lot of conspiracy theorists believe he and Lee Harvey Oswald are friends. Well, in 1960, he was approached by the FBI in Oakland, California, after his various identities and passports triggered several red flags. He tried to flee before federal officials could interview him, and he hurt one FBI agent in the process. And on June 17, 1960, he died from self-administered potassium cyanide. Very strange individual indeed. You know, one of the world's most sought-after men was Osama bin Laden. U.S. Department of State's Rewards for Justice program posted a $10,000 reward on his head. The Airline Pilots Association and the Air Transport Association prepared to provide an extra $2 million to exchange information leading to apprehension. 1988, bin Laden founded the terrorist organization Al-Qaeda, which translates as the base, which funded the terrorist bombings of the United States embassies in Nairobi, Kenya, and Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. Killed 224 people on August 7, 1998. Also, he funded the attack on the USS Cole in Yemen on October 12, 2000. And he coordinated plane hijackings and assaults on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon on September 11, 2001. In 1998, he established the World Islamic Front for Holy Wars against Jews and Crusaders and issued a proclamation declaring the killings of American civilians and military alike was an individual duty for every Muslim to liberate the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Holy Mosque and for their armies to move out of all the lands of Islam, defeated and unable to threaten any Muslim in the future. Now, not a great deal was known about Osama bin Laden's past. He just literally seemed to appear like Athena out of Zeus's head. Born in Saudi Arabia in 1957, son of a rich Saudi family, when his father died, he inherited $300 million and earned a large personal fortune as a well-connected businessman in the building trades and retail commerce in the Middle East. He was a big man, 6'4", wore the clerical vestments of a spiritual leader of his exceedingly slender frame. Now, conspiracy theorists tend to find irony in Osama bin Laden's deadly career. He was, in their opinion, a Frankenstein monster produced by the Central Intelligence Agency. CIA recruited bin Laden in 79 to resist the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan as part of the greatest covert operation in CIA history. They used Pakistan's Inter Services Intelligence, ISI, as go-between, since none of the CIA's efforts could be traced back to Washington for this covert activity to succeed. And there was a lot of sympathy for the Afghan independence fighters. The main purpose of the support was to devastate the Soviet Union's armed capabilities. Now, bin Laden started funneling money to the Mujahideen, battling the invaders, and grew connected to the Egyptian Jihad and other Islamic extremist organizations. And the CIA, for its part, aggressively pushed Afghan rebel Muslims to proclaim jihad against the Soviets. And 35,000 Muslim fanatics from 40 Islamic countries were recruited to fight the invaders of their brother's motherland. And the CIA and the ISI established guerrilla training camps in which military methods are combined with Islamic teachings. And bin Laden was actively engaged in training camps for freedom fighters to combat the Soviets in the early 80s. Recruited thousands of Saudi Arabia, Algeria, Egypt, Yemen, Pakistan, and Sudan to continue the battles against Islam's enemies. And the CIA and the ISI were rewarded for their covert efforts by persuading over 100,000 overseas Islamic extremists to join the resistance against the Soviet invasion. And in March of 1985, President Reagan approved a National Security Decision Directive increasing covert military help to the Muslim rebels, which is coming back to bite us now, don't you know? The reactions of Muslim radicals may gauge the undercover operation's effectiveness after the Soviets withdrew. Many subsequently said they had no clue they were waging war on behalf of the U.S. And despite interactions at the highest levels of the intelligence system, the Islamic rebels in the field had no idea that they were being supplied by American forces. With advanced weapons and training to make them more effective fighters, even a quick bin Laden stated he saw no proof of American support in the struggle against the Soviets. Of course, what he knew and what he said may be two different things. And although the Soviet Union withdrew its soldiers in 1989, a civil conflict in Afghanistan continued on. The Taliban, that word simply means students, were finally able to impose a hardline Islamic government in Afghanistan with the help of different forces inside Pakistan. Taliban Islamic State benefited Americans' geopolitical goals at the time, because the Afghan opium trade was funding and arming the Bosnian Muslim Army and the Kosovo Liberation Army. Washington turned a deaf ear to screams for help from the Taliban's victims. Now, in 1988, bin Laden created al-Qaeda to unite Arabs fighting against the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. It wasn't long, though, before he came to think that al-Qaeda should be the voice of the world's nearly 1 billion Muslims who think their concerns are not being heard by the West. After a truck bombing near Dahrain in Saudi Arabia in 1996, which killed 19 U.S. airmen and injured 515 others, including 240 Americans, bin Laden reaffirmed his call for jihad against Americans. He said, "We focused our declaration of jihad on the U.S. soldiers inside Arabia." That's during an interview with that fine patriotic station, CNN. But he warned that other attacks were imminent because of the bombing. According to bin Laden and several Islamic extremist organizations, Arabs have several grievances against the West, particularly the U.S. The impact of Western decadence imposes a challenge to Arab fundamentalist cultures in the Middle East and other largely Islamic regions of the globe. Americans have controlled Arab politics for almost 70 years, ignoring calls for compensation for Zionist crimes in Israel and the stealing of Arab territory in Palestine. And because of the arrogance of some people who conquered that country, Arabs were made to feel unwanted in their previous country. Historically, the West exploited Arab oil until the Arabs created their oil cartel. And prejudice toward Arabs worldwide because of their religion and cultural views is a major issue. And the Arab extremists aim to compel the whole globe to adopt Islam and form a universal Islamic theocracy. Well, you can't expect activities such as this to be ignored. 1994, bin Laden was deprived of his citizenship and banished from Saudi Arabia due to his resistance to the Saudi monarchy. He moved to Khartoum, Sudan, where he had several successful enterprises. But due to U.S. pressure, he was forced to leave Sudan as well. moved into mountainous encampments in Afghanistan in 96 and built several training sites. Urged the Americans at that time in an interview with CNN's Peter Arnett that if they wanted to halt the explosions within their nation, they should quit inciting the passion of millions of Muslims. He warned that the hundreds of thousands had been slain or displaced in Iraq, Palestine, and Lebanon, had brothers and relatives who had turned Ramzi Youssef, who was convicted of the 1993 World Trade Center attack, into a symbol and a teacher. Well, according to some, bin Laden rose to become the world's most known terrorist. And we didn't help things when on August 19, 1998, we launched a missile attack in Sudan on a target that turned out to be an aspirin, powdered milk, and baby food plant. It's supposed to be a military target. 167 Muslims worshiping in a neighboring mosque were murdered in the bombing, including at least one of bin Laden's relatives. So he extended his terror network and issued a fatwa, a religious opinion or judgment given by a competent scholar or religious authority calling for jihad against the U.S. He was named to the American FBI 10 Most Wanted Fugitive and 10 Most Wanted Terrorist list for his role in the 1998 U.S. Embassy bombings. Following the World Trade Center attack in 2001, the FBI put a $25 million reward on his head. In addition, conspiracy theories cite the fact that 24 American members of bin Laden's family, along with over 100 other highly placed Saudis, were secretly flown out of the U.S. without being questioned as evidence that the secret government was keeping an eye on bin Laden's family. Well, he was able to avoid the U.S. military in the three presidential administrations, but finally, May 2nd, 2011, he was shot and killed inside a private residence, the residential complex in Abbottabad in Pakistan by Navy SEALs and CIA agents. President Obama, of all people, authorized that action. But there's still questions as to whether or not it was really bin Laden that was killed. For many years, conspiracy theorists claimed bin Laden was tremendously beneficial to sections of the hidden government. So for that reason, they gave someone else to be killed in his place. Well, we've come to the end of today's show. We'll be talking about more secret societies and conspiracy theories tomorrow. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great evening.